When the strange becomes reality. When the light becomes dark. When you open your eyes and the monsters are still there. That's when you want your family. Welcome to the safest place in the paranormal world, TAPS Family Radio. They're the family you always wish you had. Your hosts tonight are Tim Ellis of the Upper Peninsula Paranormal Research Society of Michigan and Chris Perkins of the Atlantic Paranormal Society, interviewing the biggest names and tackling the subjects you want to hear about only on Jackalope Radio. They're not your average family, but I guess that's what makes them fun. Here is Chris and Tim.
And good evening and welcome back to the long anticipated return of TAPS Family Radio. It is myself, Tim Ellis, back with Chris Perkins. It feels so good to be back on the air. Chris, after all these months, how are you?
I am so stinking excited to be back. I'm great. I have missed you. I have missed Cormac. I've missed Mailman Larry. And I've missed being able to do this. I didn't realize how much I was going to miss it, but I really did. And I'm so excited to be back tonight.
I agree. It was issues beyond our control why TAPS Family Radio had to take a break, but we knew it was for the best at the time because we had some technical issues we had to work through, and we did. And I agree with you though. Absent makes the heart grow fonder, and man, I missed all of you guys too. And it's so good to be back on the air. And we're looking forward to a long run here now of TFR, and hopefully we won't have to take any major breaks here in the near future. So, well, let's get right back to this thing, shall we? Let's jump right in. Feast first. We know what we have to do here at this point, Chris. We got to take a look at some of the crazy stories. You know, I would like to catch up with you, but we're about 10 minutes behind already.
Yeah.
So maybe we can play catch up at our next show because man. I got to find out how you're doing, how everything was over the last few months. But let's just jump right into it right now, shall we? Let's get going with some cool stories out there. And as always, ladies first. I know you've got some ones you're real excited about. Let's talk some strange stuff.
Well, you know, it's not so much that I was so excited, although my second one is really more about helping you.
Me?
Yes, helping you. But let me do the first one first. We'll make that one wait. I know that, you know, most of us, by the way, happy belated Easter. Thank you. I know that a lot of us on the last weekend on Sunday were hunting Easter eggs. And the first story I have is about a little boy, 3-year-old boy in England, who, like so many children around the world, was out hunting Easter eggs on Sunday with about 25 other children about his age, 3, 4, 5 years old. And when it came time to pull the children together to see what they had and to count their eggs, one of the fathers, Stuart Moffat, who was there with his wife and kids, turned around and saw one of the children from the gathering standing on something that he believed looked like a hand grenade. Turns out it was a hand grenade, and not just a hand grenade, but a live hand grenade. They stopped the Easter egg hunt, called in the authorities, the bomb squad, who came in and detonated the grenade. And I guess the children then went on with their own party and had a happy Easter.
So we're going to, I suppose if handled right by the adults, the kids would have just thought it was like fireworks for the day.
Sure. Well, the picture of it, good grief. I mean, it could have done a lot of damage. It was really fortunate that the little guy didn't pick it up and pull the pin and, you know, off they go. But they believe it may have been left over from World War II, from an American army base. Of course, we didn't clean up after ourselves. And
shame.
I know. They always say leave a place better than you found it. So
that's right.
Apparently that didn't happen.
So, wow. Good thing. I mean, you know, at least it has a happy ending considering what could have taken place. That's, you know, thank goodness nothing serious happened with that.
That's right. I agree. Oh, okay. Crazy story.
Happy Easter. You're right. Here's one that's really cool. And I know a lot of our listeners may already be familiar with this story. But if not, I thought it would be really neat to bring it up right now since we are coming up, can you believe it, on the 100th anniversary of the sinking of the Titanic.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it'll be April 15th, 14th, 15th, because it was through the overnight when it happened. And, of course, the re-release of the big blockbuster 3D now, you can see it and all that stuff. So I figured this one would be neat to do. Now, check this out. This is I'm going to set the scene here, and you tell me what I'm talking about here. In early April, a luxury ocean liner set off across the Atlantic. The boat did not carry enough lifeboats to hold its 3,000-odd passengers, but that didn't matter since the liner was deemed to be unsinkable. One fateful night, the liner struck an iceberg off the coast of Newfoundland, causing the boat to sink and most of its passengers to perish. I mean, obviously, that sounds like it's something...
It's the Titanic.
Exactly.
Right.
It's not.
What?
This is the plot of the novella, which is called Futility. It was a novella that was published in 1898, 14 years before the Titanic sank.
Oh, my word. Are you kidding?
I'm not joking. And get this. The name of the boat in the novella was the Titan. T-I-T-A-N.
You just gave me chills.
So you've never heard this before then?
No, I have not heard that. Now, is this one of those things where I'm the only person who's not heard this?
I don't think so. I know I had heard it, but you know, it's a great story. It was written by Morgan Robertson. He was a former sailor, and Futility was he was basically writing it to show how humans become so arrogant sometimes in their creations. Our producer Cormac says he heard about it, but that's because he's Irish.
Right.
He even knew the name, the Titan. The story centered around an allegedly unsinkable ocean liner, which ventures... The only difference was here, in his story, the ocean liner ventures from the U.S. to England, whereas the Titanic was from England to the U.S. on its maiden voyage. Now, the ship is deemed unsinkable, carries not enough lifeboats, hits an iceberg, goes down. Here's the crazy thing, too. At the speed that the Titanic hit it, and on the same side of the boat, the starboard side was almost identical. It was on the starboard side, and the speed was almost identical, too, to the boat, the Titan, in the novella.
That is just crazy. I mean, wow. Ugh.
And the thing was, at the time of the publication, Futility was not a popular book because it came out at the time of Jules Verne and H.G. Wells, so sci-fi was really big in those times. So the book was not, as a matter of fact, by the time the Titanic was even in the design phase, the novella on Futility was already out of print. That's how little people even paid attention to this thing. It wasn't until after that this thing obviously started to catch on and become so popular and people were talking about it. Now... for decades, Futility has been held up as proof of psychic abilities. A lot of people say that he must have had psychic abilities to check this out. Here's one more eerie coincidence with the Titanic. William T. Stead, he's an English journalist. He had a keen interest in spiritualism, and he also published some allegedly predictive writing about the Titanic, including in 1892, he wrote a story about a ship that rescues passengers of a ship that collided with an iceberg. Here's the thing. Stead was actually a passenger on the Titanic. He perished on the Titanic.
Oh, my word.
Like, after, you know, obviously he published it in 1892 and the wreck happened in 1912. Absolutely amazing ties there to the Titanic.
That is no, I have never heard any of that before. That is just bizarre. Coming out soon, in fact, it'll be 2013, is the first flying car. This car is I hope I say this right. It's the Terrafugia Transition. But you know what? Don't worry, Tim, because it's only running about $279,000.
Oh, no problem.
No, you know what? And if you and producer Cormac and you know, our Larry the mailbag guy go in together, it's not going to be much. And the cool thing is it does not require a pilot's license. It's only 20 hours of flight instruction. And you can actually... navigate one of these things. Now, they say not to think of it as a flying car, but a plane that can be driven, a plane that can drive. Comes complete with a GPS. It's been signed off by both the Federal Air and Automotive regulators, and this thing is going to happen. Flying car.
But I got to assume you need a pilot license. Do you have one?
No, you don't need a pilot license. All you have to do is complete a 20. You don't need, I'm not kidding here. You don't need a pilot's license. You only have to complete a 20-hour flying course, just 20 hours of instruction. They said, you know, although 28 is more typical, it's amazing to think. I mean, it's a little frightening, to be honest, to think that people won't have to have a pilot's license for this thing. But it runs on regular conventional premium unleaded fuel. In the air, it'll do about 116 miles an hour. On the highway, it'll do 80 miles per hour. Gets about 35 miles per gallon on the highway. So I would like a, let's go with blue.
You already got your color picked out.
Already got my color picked out. I think it would look great when I'm like leaping over all the traffic jams in my little blue transition is what it's called. So they say what makes it so expensive is the fact that it's made out of carbon fiber. And, you know, I'm sure they'll come up with some really cheap materials that'll make it completely unsafe instead of just relatively unsafe. But yeah, you know, we all talked about those things growing up. And when we're talking about all those years in the future and well, look, you know, they're coming out. There'll be another one out in 2014. This one is supposed to be on the market in 2013.
Watch out, George Jetson. Here
That's
we come.
Right. No joke.
All right. Well, there we go. Those are the interesting stories out there, and we always love to share them and dig them up and have a lot of fun with them. So here's the deal. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got our Taps family segment for you. We're going all the way to Florida for this one, my friends. We are happy to be back. This is TFR on Jackalope Radio.
Attention all personnel. You got it. You got it. You found the most listened to radio station. Jackalope Radio.
You're listening to Taps Family Radio, the show your mother warned you about. Tired of wondering where to get the best ghost hunting gear at the best price? Wondering if you're being ripped off or if the product is high quality and can last the rugged life of a ghost hunter? Your fear and search is over. Creepy Hollow Gear is the home of ghost hunting gear made by ghost hunters for ghost hunters. Founded by Paul Bradford of Sci-Fi Channel's Ghost Hunters International, Paul wanted to create a place where all the equipment was proven and tested in the field. Some even built by Paul and his team, making Creepy Hollow Gear the only place you can get some of this equipment. Check them out for yourself at www.creepyhollowgear.com, where you'll find a place that is set up for teams and enthusiasts who aren't inclined to build their own equipment or kit. A site that has the top gear at prices a team on a budget can afford. A place where people can try new equipment and technology. That's www.creepyhollowgear.com. Ghost hunting gear made by ghost hunters for ghost hunters.
Hey, you, come here. What are you hanging around out there for? Why don't you come inside? Check out what's in the grindhouse instead of hanging around outside the grindhouse. Because we got a lot of great stuff in the grindhouse. Movies. Night of the Living Dead, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Payment in Blood, Blood Feast, The Flesh Eaters, Mad Doctor of Blood Island, She-Devils, Devil's Nightmare. Anything you can think of will run in the grindhouse. But then sometimes it's not all about movies, too. Sometimes it's about wrestling. Sometimes it's about the women of WSU. Sometimes we have on a legend or two to talk. Some of your favorite stars, directors, personalities on to talk about things they can only talk about at the Grindhouse. So tune in every Saturday night, 9 p.m. Central, 10 p.m. EST, because this is my Grindhouse, 42nd Street Pete. And everybody knows when 42nd Street Pete is in the house, anything goes. So tune in. Just pick your ticket up at the door. Just sit down, relax, and enjoy. It's all about the Grindhouse.
Jackalope Radio.
Hidden in the shadows of Dublin, the small and unassuming area known as Carlow, Ireland, holds a haunted history that you may not know about. The town dates back to before Ireland's written history, but now its haunted history has been written and recorded by authors Cormac Strain and Danny Carthy. Haunted Carlow takes you on an eerie and fascinating journey through pubs, cafes, private homes, and schools. Go to hauntedcarlow.com or amazon.com to get your copy today and see a side of Carlow, Ireland you never knew existed.
And welcome back to Taps Family Radio on this Tuesday evening. And it is Tim Ellis and Chris Perkins with you. So happy to be back and on the air with TFR. We want to remind everyone, if you want to join us on our website, you can go to tapsfamilyradio.net. And of course, it's a wonderful site, which is set up by our producer, Cormac. He does such a great job with it, because right there on the main page, you can see all of our podcasts from every show we've ever done. And you can also see up top, you just click on the tab and join us in our chat room. And you can join us in there 24/7 any day. But if you're in there, well, we're live on a show, and you can ask questions there as well. So join us over there at tapsfamilyradio.net. And don't forget, if you have an iPhone, iPod, iPad, iTouch, iWhatever, we've got our iApp on there too. So you can download the app and you can bring Taps Family Radio and Jackalope Radio along with you wherever you are. Well, with that being said, Chris, it is that time of the show where we like to put the spotlight on one of our great Taps Family teams that are out there in the field doing the great work that represents the Taps family so well. Who do we got tonight?
Well, tonight, actually, there's a dual purpose tonight. Tonight we have Rich with, and I know I'm going to mess this up because I do every time. Is it Kissimmee, Rich?
Yes.
Okay, because I mess that up, and sometimes I say Kissimmee.
Yay. You got it.
It's Kissimmee Paranormal.
Kissimmee Paranormal Investigations. Rich is one of our very active TAPS family members who is involved annually in a conference that I would like for him to talk to you about, or to all of us about. And we've also brought in John. Now, John is also with the conference. John is with Southwest Florida. Is that correct?
Well, Morgan and myself sort of taken a break from Southwest Florida Paranormal Investigations, and we've donated our time totally to the PIA, which takes about 6 to 8 months to put on. So I am a VIP alumni of Southwest Florida Paranormal Investigations. Andrew is the head of that right now, and he's running that group. It just gives us more time to do what we need to do, and that's take care of PIA. So that's pretty much why I'm here.
Awesome. Well, I tell you what, we've referred to it as PIA a couple of times. Why don't you do me a favor and just explain what PIA stands for and head us off in that direction. Tell us a little bit about what exactly PIA is.
Okay. PIA was an idea that came about 6 years ago, sitting in a Starbucks coffee shop with Morgan Bell, Rich Ramsey, myself, and I believe Honey was there at the time, the founder of Southwest Florida Paranormal. But we were talking about putting together a community, an event that all the groups throughout Southwest Florida, or even Florida itself, can attend and gain knowledge and network and share things and share investigations and share evidence and technical stuff and the whole organization, the whole meaning of being a ghost hunting group is to just bring it together, bring the community together. So it started 6 years ago, and it started out small. I think the first year there was probably 50-some people that showed up to our sixth year, which is going to be this year, and we're anticipating around 140 to 150 this year. So it has grown. Everyone puts on the event. And what I mean by that is that it is a community event. Everyone shares in participating in the event and putting on the event. There is a $15 cover charge at the door, and that all of that goes directly back into the community. No one gets paid for their time. If we have speakers that come down, there's no compensation for that. Matter of fact, they even pay for their own rooms to enjoy the event.
And entry fee.
We've gotten a lot of response. It's just building and building and building. But it brings the community together. You put back into what you've taken out of the community. We've all started somewhere doing ghost hunting and paranormal and cryptozoology and UFO and all that kind of stuff. So it's giving back to the community where you started from. But the idea came about, and we decided to go ahead and give it a go. And I think at that time, we had an experience with a larger event that took place in Florida, and I really don't want to mention any names, but
thank you.
we participated in that, and that was a learning experience for us, and we knew the direction then where we wanted to go with PIA. And that stood for community. And we've gotten such very good response from a lot of people, a lot of groups, a lot of new groups, and groups that said, you know, I've heard about it. I never attended, but I've heard all good things. I'm going to be there this year. How can I help? We've got a couple of groups. I got one group coming out of Plant City, and they're just, they're willing to help out with everything. Matter of fact, they're bringing a smoker down for some barbecue food for us this year. So it's grown.
And I'm going just for that. Just for
we're going to have ribs and chicken and all kinds of stuff. And the party on Saturday night is the best. The meet and greet party is the best. So, but the event is going to be held this year at the Kenilworth Lodge. Last year was the first conference we held at the Kenilworth, and we've gotten along so well with the Kenilworth that they ask if, you know, if we want to come back, we're welcome. So we found a home, and it seems to work for all of us. It's in the Sebring area. So it's July 27th, 28th, and 29th, which is the last weekend in July of 2012. And the theme is, you know, what is next? We're going to do a little bit of Mayan and, you know, what happened with the calendar and where we're going for 2012. And matter of fact, I just got off the phone with Jody Cook, who's attending the event this year, and he's going to come down and bring down some of the Bigfoot research and talk a little bit about some zombies and different things that he's into as a speaker. And I was like, perfect, Jody, that's great. And he's wanting to be a part of it. So I'm really happy for that. Erica Paracon, Pensacola Paracon, she's coming down. She's going to speak this year. So we have a lot of good things happening so far. It's still a little bit early. We've got a lot of registrations that took place, but speakers are coming along. I think Morgan Bell is putting some stuff together for the MUFON. So I don't know how many titles he has in MUFON, but I know the card turns over and there's still writing on the back of it. So
I think that one time just agreed to call him the Grand Poobah because he is. I know that's his niche. You know, if anybody has one, that's his thing. And I've always enjoyed talking with Morgan about MUFON. It's definitely something you can tell he's very passionate about. And you know, it's great when it shows in somebody like that. So,
yeah.
Matter of fact, Friday night, we're actually going to probably do a Skywatch.
Oh, how fun.
For that night, just to, you know, for people that want to join. It's not going to be scheduled. It's just going to be a bunch of telescopes there, and they're going to be free for people to use. I'm bringing like four. So we have a Skywatch that we're going to actually be doing.
Well, you know, I love anything that builds the community and that brings people together. But you know what? This just sounds so so connected with everybody kind of pitching in. I really like the sound of that. And then it sounds like everybody takes a little bit of ownership of it that way, too, which helps build it. I love the fact that you're not just on ghosts. You know, you're not just, you know, everybody's a ghost hunter. It's a little bit of everything. That sounds really, really cool.
And zombies. I heard zombies this year. Yes. I mean, you know, we've come full circle when we've got zombies now. I love it. I love it.
Somebody needs to tell Jason Hawes that you guys are touching on the whole zombie thing. Cause you know, I don't know if you watch his Facebook page or not, but, he's definitely prepared should we be invaded by zombies.
Well, what I know about zombies is I know that you can hide under your car. You'll be safe as they walk by. And I think I saw something else on The Walking Dead because I know how to deal with them. I just need to know a little bit more about zombies. But I did ask Jody. I said, you know, let's mix it up a little bit this year. You know, I've always had Scott Marlowe come in, and I kind of wanted a new face. You know, another opinion or another set of ideas and those kind of things to enlighten the community. And for those of us that know the stuff about Bigfoot and crypto, and then for those of us that don't. And the event becomes it's not open to the general public. Not you have to be sponsored in order to go if you are of the general public. And I'm only saying that due to lack of a better term. But if you've been ghost hunting, you're not associated with a group and you want to go to this event, contact one of the groups within the Florida area and ask if they'll sponsor you. They'll be more than happy to. And the only reason we want to do it that way is we get to know who you are. and then we can open up the community to you. And it's worked out well so far, so we kind of want to keep it like that. But we do have a lot of people being sponsors, so don't be afraid if you're not in a ghost hunting group. I want you all to go to the website and look at the registration page and go from there. It's a great event. It truly is. I look forward to it, and I live for it, to be honest with you. Now you guys got the shirt. I live for baseball. I live for the PIA. I enjoy putting it together every year. It takes about 8 months of a lot of work and a lot of phone calls. And mm-hmm. I have to sit and listen to everyone. And whether it be giving us credit or whether it be giving us, I don't like this or I don't like that, I take it all into consideration. I listen to it. And Morgan's there and Rich Ramsey's there. And we talk about it. And it's working. So, we're just enjoying it.
Well, you can definitely tell when something is a labor of love. I can't say it, but you can definitely tell it. You put a lot of time and effort into it. And I know that, I hear Rich talk about it every year and he gets all excited. And I'm one of those people you were talking about that says, I really want to go. And it will work out one day. I am confident in my belief that it will work out. But yeah, it just sounds, and you said something important there too, that you found a home. I think having it at the same location, it kind of gives it a little bit of a solid ground. Everybody knows what to expect, and gosh, that's exciting. Good job.
Well, it took the work out of putting a lot of the work out of putting the event together. Once we found that place and we just decided that this is it, this is the home for PIA. Unless it burns down, a hurricane, or the lodge says you can never come back again, this is going to be our home. It's centrally located, and that does make a difference. It's everybody can just drive from either side or from north and south, and they're there. But it took a lot of weight off of our shoulders, meaning Morgan's, myself, and Virginia. I do not want to forget Virginia Walters, who is on my right side all the time. I cannot put this event on without her, from Fire and Ice Paranormal. She's there for me when I need anything done or we need to figure it all out. Matter of fact, she's the one that found the Kenilworth Lodge. So God bless her, man. It's a great little place to have it. So, but the event itself, I think with everybody involved, and I did say it earlier, it's a community. Everybody participates and everybody wants to come back. Matter of fact, they're planning their work vacations around it, just to be there in the last weekend in July. So we've not only found a home, we found a date, and everybody's comfortable with it. And I think if they expect that every year, they'll know how to plan and be around and try to make it, or, if they're down in the Florida area. But anyone's welcomed. Anyone, you guys from TAPS, anyone wants to come down, they're welcome. So
that's awesome.
I remember the first year, Morgan actually called me and extended a welcome to me to go down there for the first year. And we got talking on the phone, and come to find out we think quite a bit alike. And I loved the meaning behind the PIA. And I felt so bad because my engine blew like 2 weeks before we were supposed to go down there.
That's right.
And I was like, oh, my God, I ain't going to be able to make it. I wanted to go so bad, I rented a car.
Oh, wow.
And went down to the first one with a rental car just because I didn't want to miss it. And I've been to everyone ever since.
The old Clewiston Inn.
Yes. And I mean, it is. I enjoy it very much. So I've learned so much from doing it. I've met extremely well groups out there all over the place. I've called on groups to help me on different cases and stuff just because of the PIA event, that I met them in the event. It's just unbelievable. Actually, I just looked, and we're up to about 70 already registered for the PIA event this year.
Wow.
And we just opened the registration at the beginning of last month.
Well, I'm looking at the PIA website, which, by the way, is paranormalinformationassociation.com for those who are listening. And really, it's a very inexpensive event to attend. Just looking at your prices, I'm very impressed. And so what you're saying is people need to be in a team or on a team that's an established team to be able to go to this. Now, do they need to, if it's a team that wants to go, do they need to do anything special as far as making sure they're with a team? Or is that part of the registration process? Do they fill out a form?
Well, if you go on to the form there, it'll ask you what team are you associated with and so forth. And what we'll do is when they come in, we take a look at them, and we'll actually go on to the website and see how long you guys been around and so forth.
Okay.
We haven't turned anybody away.
Okay.
You know, it's just that, you know, this is four paranormal groups because in February, we just became 12 years. We've been doing this for 12 years in February. And I wish I had this when I was first starting my group because it would have saved me a lot of money and a lot of bumps and bruises with learning from other groups that have done it. You know, so, I mean, it's very, very helpful.
Yeah, and when it comes to registration, Florida is not a big state. We know everyone. We know the ghost hunters. We know the teams that are out there, and everybody knows each other. So not only during registration, we get phone calls. Hey, so-and-so is a spinoff from this group. I know who he is. He's a great guy. He's going to register, all those kind of things. So we just ask that. You know, it sort of keeps down it keeps down the newbies from coming in. It becomes an event that is a community of we're not in there discussing orbs.
Right. If you're like me, I've noticed at the Academy events that there are two distinct groups of people that will come. And some of those are the people who really want to learn and network and grow as an investigator. And the others are just those fans that want that chance to do what they've seen on TV or just to hang out with those people that do those things. And it sounds like maybe you're just trying to focus in on the people who are really in the community and not that parafan quite so much.
Correct.
Which I don't fault you for at all. I think that makes it a very genuine experience.
Yes, exactly. And like I said, we've gotten a lot of rave reviews from speakers that just want to come back and do it again because they just enjoy the community. It's kind of like they're there, but they don't have all the people, give me your autograph.
Or, right.
You know, give me a picture with you. They're just enjoying themselves. And they open up so much and you get to know so much about them as you're just sitting poolside after the event's over and you're just having conversations about life. It's just a wonderful thing. And people just enjoy this. They come back every year. So we have a great thing going on. The party's a wonderful thing. We're going to have a nice spread for dinner. Oh, my gosh. We ran out of room in the small ballroom. There was standing room only when it came to the dinner. And let's not forget, we give out raffle items. Everybody gets tickets, and we're giving away raffle stuff all during the event. A lot of ghost hunting equipment. Sean comes in from Ghost Stop. He's heading the tech up this year. And Sean's going to be in there doing a little workshop and a bunch of other stuff. And he donates so much for the raffle items. And everybody brings a raffle item. And you get a ticket and you get something.
Awesome.
It's just a great time.
Well, and I noticed that there is a golden raffle ticket, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Silver's and a golden. Well, the golden raffle ticket, if you win the golden raffle ticket, your next year entry fee of $15 and your two-night stay is taken care of.
Nice.
Wow.
You just need to come to the event.
That's fantastic.
And it is non-transferable. I do have to say that. So, but we draw the raffle tickets and somebody wins that. And then along with that, we have two silver tickets. Which gets you the entry fee for next year. So if you win a silver ticket, you don't have to pay the $15 you're in. You get to eat and enjoy the event, have a good time. Chris from Proof puts on the little after party for us, and he's been doing that for, I believe, my gosh, the last six years now. Yeah, I think all the events.
Yeah, he's been doing it really a real good job on it. You know, and we keep the price down because we do realize that, you know, we all start at the same spot, you know. I mean, we don't make money at doing this, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we try to keep the cost down, and that's, you know, I mean, when I ask speakers to come on board, you know, I tell them, you know, fortunately, you know, you'd have to pay your own way because we want you on equal terms along with everybody else because we all start at the same place.
Well, and I have to say, if you've already sold 70 tickets, that is a great thing. I know just from kind of being in the community on an event you know, perspective, tickets are just not selling to things right now, even to the large, you know, large annual events. And so it speaks well for not only your event, but your prices when you're able to sell that many tickets that quickly in this type of environment. So I think you guys are putting something great together again this year. That's great. Speaks well for you guys.
Yeah, we're going to enjoy it. And like I said, all the money goes back into the event. I think we were left over last year about close to $200, maybe $300. It all goes right back into the event. That pays for the posters if we need to get any, or the lanyards. All of it goes right back into it. So, and the food, the dinner is just incredible. I can't say more. All the girls get together and they bring something. They all cook or bring something. There's cabins there in the back of the Kenilworth that we put aside for the admin groups, and they use the ovens and they come up with their specialty. It is great. You will not leave there hungry. Trust me. It's a great event.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
You just registered, didn't you, Tim?
Twice. I want two meals.
And I will say this, with Plant City coming down, and we talked about the smoker with ribs and chicken, we're going to have it. We're going to be all set.
You know, so, all you have to do is light a smoker, and people will just come flocking there, just the smell of that that cooking. So, go ahead. Do you have something else?
Everybody just comes together. This year, even last year at the event, we were getting people at the event coming up to us and asking us, okay, how can I get involved in next year's event? You know, I like what you guys are doing here. How can I help? Yeah. And that's how we got Plant City. They said, you know, we could bring my smoker and we could actually do barbecue. And we're like, okay, you know.
Well, guys, it sounds like you have just got a great thing put together for this July. I wish you the very best. I wish I could be there. Reality tells me I'm not going to make it. But you know, if I manage to win the lottery next year, I will be there.
Listen. If TAPS Family is up to this, or TAPS Family Radio is up to this, why can't we just do a little segment where we can tape something when we're there and you guys can do it on air or something like that if you want?
Oh, that'd be interesting. We'll have to talk about that. That sounds cool. Tim,
yes,
what do you think?
Yes, I like the way this sounds already.
We'll
have to talk more off air about this.
Food and then an interview. That sounds great.
And Florida.
That sounds good. I'm liking it. Well, guys, we're gonna let you go. This went by too fast, but it honestly does every time. It just whips by. But I'm so glad you were able to come on tonight and to share about this this event. I think you'll probably be overwhelmed with the number of people who are signing up. It sounds great.
Well, thanks, guys. We appreciate it. Thanks for the time on air, too. We really do appreciate that. The PIA thanks you guys tremendously.
You know, I think, too, Chris, I think we should plan on having Rich and John back on after the last weekend there in July, because I want to hear how this went for them. I want to hear all about it.
Oh, absolutely. That'd be cool, especially the zombie part of it.
Yes.
I want to hear how that goes.
I need the zombie apocalypse field guide book. I need that. So
that's right.
We all have to have it.
All right, there we go. Rich and John, guys, thank you so much,
guys.
And we wish you the best of luck with your event coming up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. There we go. July 27th, 28th, and 29th. Don't miss it. It is the PIA conference, and I love the way that sounds, Chris. You know what I love most about it is how both John and Rich were saying it's all about the community. I mean, the community has basically come together to make this event happen. Usually some big events, there's like one or two people in the background who are pulling their hair out and making this thing run. It sounds like the whole community is pulling their hair out to make this run, and I think that is so cool.
I do, too. It sounds like a big family reunion where everybody pitches in, and I mean, they just can't go wrong with that. Sounds
Absolutely.
Great. I'm excited for them.
So there you go. If you are wanting to learn and learn the correct way on how to do what we do there out in the field, check it out, the PIA Conference, July 27th, 28th, and 29th. Do you have the website real quick there, Chris, again in front of you?
I do. It is ParanormalInformationAssociation.com.
There you go, ParanormalInformationAssociation.com. We are going to take a break. When we come back, we've got our main headline guest for you tonight. We're very excited to have him. Fresh from the filming of the latest season of Ghost Hunters International, Mr. Paul Bradford will be joining us in just a bit. This is TAPS Family Radio on Jackalope Radio.
Tired of wondering where to get the best ghost hunting gear at the best price? Wondering if you're being ripped off or if the product is high quality and can last the rugged life of a ghost hunter? Your fear and search is over. Creepy Hollow Gear is the home of ghost hunting gear made by ghost hunters for ghost hunters. Founded by Paul Bradford of Sci-Fi Channel's Ghost Hunters International, Paul wanted to create a place where all the equipment was proven and tested in the field. Some even built by Paul and his team, making Creepy Hollow Gear the only place you can get some of this equipment. Check them out for yourself at www.creepyhollowgear.com, where you'll find a place that is set up for teams and enthusiasts who aren't inclined to build their own equipment or kit. A site that has the top gear at prices a team on a budget can afford. A place where people can try new equipment and technology. That's www.creepyhollowgear.com. Ghost hunting gear made by ghost hunters for ghost hunters.
What's happening, hot stuff?
Why so serious?
Jackalope Radio.
You're listening to Taps Family Radio, the coolest place on the web.
If you are in need of a professional, experienced, and confidential paranormal investigation at a home or commercial location, the International Paranormal Reporting Group is ready to talk with you. For more information about us and other services we offer, or to interact with team members and people just like you, visit us online at IPRGC.com. That's IPRGC.com. The International Paranormal Reporting Group is a proud TAPS family member.
Visionary, I'm visionary.
And welcome back to Taps Family Radio. It is Tim Ellis and Chris Perkins with you. So glad to be back on a Tuesday evening. Again, we want to remind all of our listeners, if you want to join us at our website, tapsfamilyradio.net. Myself and Chris are usually always in there live during the show. And if you ever have any questions for any of our guests as well, that's a great way to do it, because while you're on there, you can see the tab that says chat room. Come on in and chat with us. Otherwise, just on our main website, you can see all of our podcasts from all of our great guests we have had in the past. And we are about to add another name to that list of great guests. However, he has been a guest on here one time before, but it's been a long time ago. So it's been a long time coming to get this man back on TFR. We're so happy. Just wrapping up another season on Sci-Fi with Ghost Hunters International, where we would love to welcome to the airwaves right now, Mr. Paul Bradford. Paul, good evening.
Yay!
Good evening, Tim, and good evening, Chris. How are you both?
We are
doing
wonderful.
Great. I have been looking forward to this. We have not had you on in a while, and you are always so much fun to have on. This is going to be good. I'm excited.
Thank you.
Because you know you're so shy. He's so shy.
He is. Yeah, he doesn't say his mind
shy.
At all.
That's why it's been so long. I've actually just built up the courage since last time.
As a matter of fact, if you ever want to know how shy Paul is, just follow him on Facebook, and you'll see just how shy he is.
That's right.
Yes.
Poor guy.
Now,
I
know,
shell a little.
I know, Paul, you had actually, on your personal page, had reached that 5,000 mark. You had to create a fan page, didn't you?
I did, yeah. Well, that was some time ago now. And the thing is, people still go there and send friend requests. So I've actually got like 400 to 500 friend requests in waiting that I can't accept because they won't allow me to take any more.
Right.
You know,
hello, so Facebook. Why do they even allow them to send friends requests if you can't approve them? Facebook.
I don't. Why are they limiting you to 5,000 friends? Are they telling you that that's all you're allowed?
I guess.
So basically, you hit 5,000. I'm sorry, friend. I cannot be your friend.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not allowed to talk to you or anything now.
It's
very strange.
My mummy says I cannot talk to you. I cannot.
That's it. Yeah, yes. You're clearly a bad influence. Facebook is not to be your friend.
Well, I'm glad I got it under the wire. Now I know I'm not a bad influence. See, Tim, I told you.
Yes.
I am still deleting people, so I can add new. So, you still got to be careful.
Oops.
Because I get so much spam. And people's accounts are always getting hacked as well.
Exactly.
And then when that happens, they start putting stuff that's inappropriate on your timeline and all that stuff. Yeah. So I delete whatever they send. And obviously, because they've been hacked, I delete that account as well. So that allows for somebody else new to come in. But at the same time, I have this fan page anyway that, the like page. So feel free to like me.
But don't be friends.
You can like me, but you can't be my friend.
Yeah.
Now, Paul, you just brought something up that I think is very important. And I wasn't even thinking of asking you about this tonight, but I think we have to now that it's been brought up. What is the official stance of Paul Bradford on the new Facebook timeline? We must know.
Oh, Christ, I don't know. Have you not been paying attention? I ramble on. I have the most random comments all the time. I don't know why. But something comes to me and I'll tweet it or something. And then it ends up on Facebook. And I have no idea what my most recent status thing is. I couldn't tell you.
I just know that that's like everyone's fired up about it on Facebook right now. They're all complaining about this new format they're going to, that timeline, instead of the old Facebook page. And I just see everyone's complaining about it. And you brought it up. And I'm like, I wonder what Paul thinks about it.
Yeah, it's just natural progression of anything that's new. People are always going to complain about it. Didn't Twitter? No, hang on. Facebook just bought Instagram, right? Who cares? Ultimately, who really cares?
Exactly.
I have no idea what Instagram.
What do you do?
Me either.
There's this big thing. Twitter exploded yesterday. It's great. Now Twitter can tell you everything you want to know. When someone's on the toilet, when they're going to work, or when Facebook buys Instagram. It's the most uninteresting thing I think I ever. I don't know why I care.
Well, for the record, I hate the timeline, but I am just so change resistant. It's not easy to navigate. Yeah,
I left it to last minute to change. I'll be honest, I did do that.
Right.
But then I think at the end of March, then everybody's just changed anyway.
Yeah. Well, I got tricked because I wanted to be on Pinterest, which is another thing I don't entirely understand yet, but everybody else is doing it, so I have to do it.
Right.
And in order to be on Pinterest, I had to change to the freaking timeline, so they get you that way.
Now, see, I don't know.
All these things I don't have time for.
Pinterest, Google Plus, what's that, LinkedIn? No. I've got Facebook and Twitter. If I use it anymore, I have no life at all.
I completely understand.
All right? GHI used to take up all of my time anyway. So I'd come home and then I'd be a week home with the family and then I'd go back out. If I had all of that as well, there'd be no time at all to do anything.
Well, you know, I spoke with a friend of mine last week who managed, who is a director in a theater, and his Facebook disappeared one day, and I was worried and got a hold of him on the phone, and he said, "Do you realize how much more productive I've been since I got rid of my Facebook page?" So, you know, it's a point there. There's a whole life.
Thing is, you turn off the internet. Like, this is the thing as well. I've done it before, right? I've been on like Twitter or Facebook all morning. I'm like, oh, you know what? Crap. No, I'm stopping this. I put up that, you know what? I've been on it too long. I'm going to take a break for the rest of the evening. 20 minutes later, I'm tweeting again on the phone. What the hell? I mean, what am I? Why? Why am I even doing it? Who cares if I'm building another phone box or a robot dog? Who cares, really? You know, I don't understand why I do it now. It's just because everybody else is doing it, I think.
Who cares?
I'm at an airport.
Well, you know, there's a good use for them too, though. I mean, I do like the way that it gives you a forum. And, you know, I was I was reading your Facebook page the other day.
See, Chris cares. Chris cares, Paul.
I care. But you shared an opinion that is an opinion I had just recently shared. So we're kind of the same there, Paul, about people being negative and bashing and just so much negativity and da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, I kind of clapped for you there, Paul, and I
Once in a while, I'll come up with a gem, but most of the time, it's just a load of BS.
Well,
really?
Actually, this actually brings us to a point that I did want to get us to, and because we're talking about social media, and this will tie in perfectly. One night, I'm sitting there at home. I'm on the couch, and I've got my Twitter, as you do, Paul. I've got my Twitter account up, and I've got my Facebook account up.
Yeah.
And I follow some GHI people on Twitter, and I follow some GHI people on Facebook. And I'm sitting there one night, and my DVR is set to record GHI. I've gotten to that point now because I'm always in such a hurry that if I can, I record my programs and then fast forward through the commercials. Sorry, sponsors.
Yeah. I wish I could sometimes.
Right.
Well, it gives you more time to use on Facebook.
That's just
it. The only thing I'm really interested in is how I look anyway.
That's right.
I don't care. I was there anyway.
So GHI is being recorded on my DVR. I'm watching something else on TV. Plus, I've got two different social medias up on my laptop. Next thing I know, one GHI member posts something on Twitter, and it catches my interest. Next thing I know, a GHI member on Facebook, and then all of a sudden, these remarks start popping up. Boom, 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 boom. Next thing I know, there's a big controversy brewing out there about an episode of GHI, and I'm like, oh my, what am I missing here? I couldn't wait to go back and watch the program. I wasn't able to watch it until the next day, unfortunately, but when I finally got a chance to watch it, it was the whole program that was related around the bloodletting ritual.
Okay.
Let's talk about this.
Okay. What do you want to know?
I want to get your perspective on it. Someone who was there on the set. Obviously, we only see the edited version.
Of course.
Yes.
Okay. Well, the fact is that we all knew as a team prior to even getting to the location that this was going to be something that was potentially going to be dumb. And we all knew this. And then during the tour, because, I mean, you know, we already have an idea of what's going to happen. We already, you know, if there's specifics, you know, that we work out prior to any investigation.
Sure.
And that was one of them. Now, me being the person who I am, I actually spoke to Barry and Chris prior to the investigation. I said, look, guys, I don't want to, you know, if that's what you want to do, that's fine. You go ahead and do that. I'd rather be somewhere else. And they're fine. That's fine. No problem. Everybody else was there when it actually happened. And then I was saying, you know, I was just, you know, talking to myself amongst the rest of the team and everything. And for whatever reason, certain members of the team decided that actually this might not be good. This might look bad on telly, I guess. You know, and then started throwing a bit of a hissy fit, but didn't really do much about it. And then it went from there, really. I mean, as I said, everybody knew what was going to happen. Everybody knew, you know, we asked for a volunteer. Had nobody volunteered, we wouldn't have done it.
Right.
So,
I'm sure.
So everybody was kind of on board when it happened.
Everybody knew what was going to happen. Everybody knew what was going to be happening. And then everybody was there. You know, I was the only person of the entire team who said I didn't want to be around. So I went to the very top of the tower and I was monitoring everything else. You know, that was it. That's how it went. But then when it got to Twitter, it completely changed. I was like, what the hell? Mm-hmm. Really? You know, and to be honest with you, we were kind of given a heads up that certain members of the team were going to be doing this.
Well, now I will be honest with you. I don't do Twitter. I'm sorry. I know I don't do Twitter, but so I didn't really see this explode. But boy, did I hear about it! Because you don't have to be on a social media network to catch. I mean, people will just throw it at you anyway. So I didn't really see, you know, who said what or what specifically was said. But it was given the impression that I guess certain of the members of the team were just really against it the whole time. And that's what I thought, that there had been maybe some disagreement that it should ever even be done. But you're saying that everybody was kind of on board.
Everyone knew about it. Everybody knew it was going to happen.
Wow. That's
well before we actually got there, everybody knew, you know, and this is what annoyed me about everything. All right. Some people, it's how to put this. Now, do I personally think the bloodletting was a good idea? I don't have an opinion. All right. If that's what they wanted to do, that's what they wanted to do. I don't have an opinion in that respect. You know, if people go out there and they want to drink themselves silly, let them drink themselves silly. That's their fault. As long as they don't, you know, do it, you know, I don't let them do their thing. Okay.
Right.
I'm one of these people who are like, okay, if that's what you want to do, I don't like it, but that's your thing.
Mm-hmm.
Do it. So these guys, they said, okay, you know, we're going to be doing this. I said, okay, fair enough. You want to do that? That's fine. I'd rather be somewhere else.
We were actually.
That was not.
I'm sorry, Paul. Go ahead.
No, go on.
We were actually talking about exactly that prior to the show, myself and Chris and our producer Cormac, who you know. Mm. And Cormac actually brought up a great point, which was, and you know, we all kind of agreed. You know, and I think you said this, Chris. Hey, look, when we're in the field, we will try some unorthodox stuff sometimes just to try to collect that information. But
yeah.
I think Cormac hit it on the head when he said, "The if there's anyone to be held to blame for anything, it maybe should be, and I don't want to get you in trouble. You're not saying this, I'm saying this, but it should maybe have been the production company who maybe should have ran some type of warning, like you'll see at the beginning of the TV show Jackass or this, where it says, kids, don't try this at home.
Oh, okay? I agree. Right. I do agree. I believe that should have been done. I think the way that maybe it was done could have been done differently. You know, and there are, you know, but there's actually ways of doing it that are professional, not spouting off on Twitter.
Right. No, you're absolutely,
you know, there are
right.
ways of
right.
doing it.
Yeah.
You know, there are ways that's actually professional, that's not just making yourself, singling yourself out as someone who's taking a stand was a load of crap, if you ask me. It's something which obviously I've said my piece on Twitter and I've said my piece on Facebook. And it's all still there. I don't delete it. So if, you know, anyone who wants to check what I said, then go ahead and do that. But I said my piece then, because I was annoyed, very annoyed that some people would do that and throw the rest of the team under the bus, because that's what they did.
I think that's when people were contacting me about it. For some reason, I'm like this clearinghouse of information. People come to me and say, is this true? Is that true? And I don't know. But I think one of the things people were more appalled about when they came to talk to me about it was not the bloodletting so much as the stab against the team. You know, it was the lack of a united front. And even if, you know, as a team, some of you agreed it was a mistake or something, there's a way to present that and still be a united front. So
I agree. I mean, you know, I support my team. You know, I'm with the team. You know, I'm there. You know, I do what I'm supposed to be doing, and I do it to the best of my ability. You know, just because I don't want to be, it's not the first time I've not wanted to be part of something. I've been elsewhere and other times as well.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, that's. Not really. I mean, that's my thing. That's what I do. There was a time we were asked, and this is going back now, a while actually. There was a time that we were asked by the production company if we would use a Ouija board during one of our investigations, because the claim was that someone was using a Ouija board and they got thrown across the room.
Wow.
Now, Barry said no. He said, I don't want anything to do with it. I said, I didn't want anything to do with it. Personally, I think it's just a board game, really. But just because that's what I think, you know, that's just my opinion, is I didn't want part of that.
Right.
You know, it never made air. It never made air because it's stupid.
I was running through my brain. I'm like, okay, what episode was this? Why didn't I see this? No. You know, I was trying, but you just said it didn't make air.
I can imagine, because that's one question I get asked so much, is about the Ouija board. And I'm kind of the same as you. I think it's just a piece of cardboard. I think it's, if there's any danger in a Ouija board, I think it's the intent in which you're using it. I don't think it's anything to do with that little board. And I've been very vocal about that. So I'm surprised if that had aired, I would have heard about that.
Exactly. No, it never aired. But that's my point is, imagine the uproar from that.
Wow.
You know, right. But at the end of the day, you know, we're out there trying unorthodox methods. We're actually in different countries doing things that are very normal to them, which may not be normal to us. As me, someone from Great Britain, and you know, the majority of our audience are America. You know, there's something, you know, the bloodletting is something which is done all the time there. This is the Mayan cultures. There are still something like 80,000 Mayans alive today.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Who still practice certain things, still practice certain rituals. Just because we're not used to that, just because it's not something that is in our normal day of life, is it wrong?
Well,
you know, and like I said before, yeah, I agree with you that the sci-fi should have perhaps put out some sort of disclaimer, should have maybe done it differently, and I agree with that. I totally agree with that.
I think that's one thing that people kind of lost sight of, too, the cultural differences there, and how, although we were completely stunned and shocked, it wasn't something necessarily that there was so completely shocking.
No, and we weren't cutting people's arms off. There was a few drips of blood, basically like something that a diabetic would do to test their blood sugars. It was a few drips of blood. You know, the way it wouldn't have been as big a deal.
Well, and you're absolutely.
It wasn't either big a deal.
No, you're absolutely right, Paul. And now, again, we were sharing this off air earlier. When I was reading the tweets and the Facebook and the tweets and everything popping up, literally in my head, the image I got was all of you in GHI standing around like this open pit or this grave, and you're all slicing your hands with this knife and letting this blood pour. I mean, literally, that's the image. And I'm like, oh, my God, what are they doing? When I finally watched the episode, though, you're absolutely right. It was a monitored procedure. There was a gentleman there who had the bandages and everything ready to go. It was a little pick of the skin and just enough to get a couple drops of blood.
And when
I actually saw it, I'm like, wow, that was nothing compared to what I had conjured up in my mind.
Right. Exactly. I think the psychological side of it was far worse than what we actually did. And what was being, you know, pushed on Twitter and Facebook was something, you know, horrible. And you know, don't get me wrong. No, I don't recommend people going out there and doing this.
Right, right.
We're in a country where this is something that's very normal for them. This is something which the guy had done this lots of times. He had done this thing, you know, this ritual. They do it with the tourist groups every now and again. You know, they do this thing all the time. So for them, it was nothing out of the norm.
Yep, absolutely.
It's because it's out of the norm for us.
Right, right.
You know, right. You know, and you know, that's really it. I mean, that's, you know, I don't really know what more I can say that hadn't been said. You know, at the end of the day, we did what we did. It should have been perhaps done a little different, but. You know, that's as when it comes to production, it's got nothing to do with us.
I guess, you know, the next question that follow this up with then, you know, because obviously you guys are done shooting. The season's done for now. How is the relationship, though, with everyone in the group? Has there really been no repair because you're not all together? Or have you guys reached out across distances through emails and stuff? Or what's going on there?
Wow, how do I put this? Oh, God, you guys are rough today.
Well, we could go to commercial. I mean,
well, yeah. Can we just get the bleep machine ready? Just one long bleep, that would be nice. Well, I talked to Barry I'm closest with Scott, and Scott vice versa. We talk to each other all the time. Scott and I even have a tour of the US set up and stuff. Great. And Scott, as I say, Scott's like a brother. You know, I take the piss out of him all the time. You know, I'm like an older brother, even though he's like 20 years older than I am. He's going to kill me for saying that because he's not. He's only about 10, if that.
But, we'll go with 20.
Yeah, we'll just say 20. I like to say he's like 46 all the time. I don't know why. It just kind of pisses him off. But yeah, I do that. And I'm closest with Scott. I talk to Barry all the time. I talk to him twice a week, usually. Joe, again, I'm good friends with Joe. We talk every now and again. And Susan, I talk to now and again, you know. We keep in contact.
Fair enough.
But, you know, that's it.
All right.
So it would be safe to say that the people you were closest with to begin with are still close to you.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. There we go.
Yes.
See, we
yes.
handled that pretty well. We did okay there.
That was very politically correct. Nice job. Yeah. Yes.
Well, you know, one of the things that people kept coming to me with after this was, well, this is it. Now that they've all been fighting, this is it. The show is done. They're arguing. Pilgrim's going to pull it. Sci-Fi is going to pull it. And I'm going to ask you this because this came up. There was apparently a petition started, and I don't know if you're aware of it or involved in it or anything. A petition that's, and maybe actually more than one, that's for the Sci-Fi Network to keep GHI. It says the Attention Sci-Fi Network, keep GHI, Ghost Hunters International on the air. Was there a rumor going that this was going to affect the show?
I think, yeah, there's been, I don't know how to put it, there's been a lot of speculation and rumors as well going around that GHI isn't going to get picked up. And we haven't yet. We haven't been yet.
Okay.
We finished recording in October. The first week of October, we finished filming. So we've actually been 7 months now, sort of not filming, which is longer than normal. And I think, obviously, people know this. People aren't stupid. They're reading our tweets. They're reading, you know, our Facebook updates. And again, this is social media spoils everything, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
It takes the whole mystery away from anything. You know, actually, that's the point. I should probably just not tweet anymore. It does. It takes the mystery away from anything. So people are putting two together, and they're coming up with five, you know.
Right.
So,
right.
But they're out there. They're writing their little blog posts, and they're doing their little articles on the show and things like that. And then, you know, rumors are spreading. Rumors are getting out there, and people are asking us, you know, what's going on. And we don't know.
Well, and what people probably need to consider, and maybe I'm wrong about this, when was the bloodletting episode actually filmed?
Oh, God. May, maybe?
Wow.
Wow, that long ago.
Yeah, May, June, something like that.
So
it was
really,
a while ago.
So if it's coming around now, it's not affecting anybody's decision right now as to whether GHI gets picked up again. Okay.
Nope.
That was kind of my
see,
point.
All that's done. See, everything has been seen. Everything's been, you know, already done. You know, they knew what was going to be broadcast before it was broadcast.
Right.
You know, so that's, you know, what they're saying, you know, people saying, oh, that episode spoiled it. No, that episode just came on. We haven't been picked up since October.
Right.
Well, in fact, since before that, you know.
With the economy the way it is, and I know it's hitting everybody, I'm pretty sure those production companies and TV, you know, the networks and everything, they're feeling it too. So I'm sure they're probably having to wait till the very last minute to do those contracts and, you know, things like that.
They did the same thing with Destination Truth, and they did the same thing with Fact or Fake.
Right.
You know, the Fact or Fake, how long has that been off the air? That's coming back next week, I think. Destination Truth, that's been off the air for ages.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
And that's coming back soon.
So nobody needs to panic is what we're saying.
No panicking. I don't think so, personally. I don't think so. Personally, good. I think, in my opinion, and it is just purely my opinion, I think that these shows that have aired recently are the best we've ever done. I think they're the best locations we've ever been to. And you know, I mean, people will argue with that, of course, you know, but in my, like I said, it's my opinion. I got to go to places which I've dreamed about, a Mayan cave, 2 miles underground I was. You know, I as a kid, I always wanted to be Indiana Jones, and that was the closest I've ever been. I'm sure that's pretty much the closest I'll ever be.
Yeah.
You know, in my opinion, like I said, in my opinion, these were just mind-blowing locations, and just to get there, I was beat to crap. It really, they kicked my ass like left, right, and center, you know. But you know, I did it, you know, and I'm so glad I did.
Well, I got
You know,
sorry, go ahead, Chris.
I was just gonna say, I've heard that. I've heard many people say that these last episodes were just phenomenal. Yeah. So I don't think that's just your perception. I think it's a widely held perception.
Good.
Yeah. If you're just joining us right now, our guest on Taps Family Radio this evening is Paul Bradford from Ghost Hunters International. And Paul, I gotta tell you, watching some of the episodes too, man, I see you guys, and you especially, you're running all over the place sometimes, jumping over this. I get winded watching you, and I can tell you're just getting into it.
Well, yeah. No, I agree. I watch it and go, Christ, did I really do that?
Now,
but yeah, no, I totally agree. These episodes are just really... I mean, I just think they're the best we've done.
And you were just sharing with us, too, saying that, you know, you've got to go to some amazing places. And that's actually, yep. I had a two-part question for you. One was, out of all the seasons you've been with GHI now, where would you consider as the your favorite place? You're so happy you got to go. But at the same time, is there a location you can remember that, for one reason or another, maybe either you just didn't like the energy around it, or you just didn't like the surrounding it. Was there ever a place you just wanted to get out of? You couldn't get out of there quick enough.
There is, actually. There is a place that I just could not get out of quick enough. And we were in Honduras at the time. And I think it was Honduras. It could have been Nicaragua. I can't remember. They're kind of blending into two to one. But basically, Scott and I, and a few others, actually, we're in this karaoke bar, and Scott got up on the mic, and I just wanted to get the hell out of there.
That's why.
I just couldn't go fast enough. He was doing Living La Vida Loca in Spanish.
Oh, no.
And it was horrible. It was that bad. It was the worst thing I think anybody has ever going to witness.
Yeah.
And I tell you, even the Ghost Adventures guys would be screaming out of that one. It was bad. I actually left. The place was like 2 blocks away from our hotel, and I could still hear him from my hotel room. It was that bad.
Chris, I don't know about you, but I was getting hunkered in. I was ready for a great story of something eerie and creepy.
What are you talking about?
Well, it was. It was unexpected. We'll just put it at that.
And the fact that you even gave Ghost...
I was not expecting Living La Vida Loca in Spain.
And the fact that you even gave Ghost Adventures a drop, I love. I mean, I high-five you for that one, man.
Oh, wow.
That's good. So, overall, though, your favorite place, would you say it was the Mayan area?
Belize. Oh, yeah, Belize. Yeah.
Very cool. It was a great episode, too. Absolutely.
It was. I mean, that to me, like I said, as far as... any place I've been to that I wanted to get to, that was one of them. That and Peru, you know. Because I have these, I don't know, like I said, I always wanted to be Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
And you know, it's the closest I'll ever be. And, you know, I've got to witness some truly amazing sights. And as a photographer, I was in heaven.
Yeah.
Oh, I could not take a bad photograph.
Well, you were sharing some amazing shots on your Facebook page.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I actually, you know, I have a book that I've done, a second book actually, that's, you know, travel photography. And because as I said, I'm a photographer in that, and my book is called Here, There, and Back Again. And it's, I basically have a lot of that sort of photography throughout, and more. You know, I try and put as much as I can into these pages. I just want to share my travels with everybody. But ultimately, the books themselves are actually dedicated to my wife and my girls, who aren't with me when I travel.
So,
you know, they're not there. So I share my travels with them through my photography.
So where can people get your photography book, your travel photography book, Here, There, and Back Again?
it's actually on Lulu, lulu.com. I actually put it on there. But I mean, I when the show's done, I mean, I'll have tweets and Facebook comments and stuff, you know, showing where you can get my book and things like that. Awesome. I also sell prints and stuff as well. I actually, I'm hoping soon to actually have an exhibition as well.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so that would be something which would be nice as well. You know, the photography itself has been very well received. When I do these conventions and things like that, people seem to really go for it. So I must have some eye, like some sort of skill there, even if it's a little bit.
So was
you know, Paul, you should have a hobby, really, you know, something to keep you busy.
Well, you know, that's the thing, though. The problem with my hobbies is when I get home, I've photographed, making up words now. What the hell?
Hey, that's a good word.
I've already taken photographs of everything in my house. Except for my daughter, I'm always taking photographs of her. But you know, so my hobbies at home generally come into the realm of building stuff. You know.
Well, that brings us to creepyhollowgear.com. Is that something that's still up and running for you?
Actually, I've only just opened it up again.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought it was down for a while.
Getting Christmas out of the way in that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the bills are adding up, you know.
We actually were plugging Creepy Hollow Gear, I think, when we were at our Taps Academy event in California, and I pulled it up on the website to show everybody, and it was closed. I'm like, wait a minute. I panicked because I didn't know it had been shut down. So it's back up and going now.
It is. It's back up and running. You know, and you can actually buy prints through there as well from my photos. You can actually buy photographic prints framed and numbered and signed and all that jazz.
Oh, that's awesome.
But yeah, you can get all that stuff and you know, obviously the ghost gear, which is the important stuff, why people generally come to my website.
I've bought gear from you. I've never been disappointed. So, yeah, people need to check it out for sure. I never mind plugging Creepy Hollow Gear. I know that one of the things that impressed me years ago with Creepy Hollow Gear was how you were just so focused on getting good gear to people. And this sounds hokey. It sounds like a commercial, but at great prices. I mean, I was thoroughly impressed with your store. So
even now, I noticed that since my shop was off, the people who were selling their versions of my illuminator and, you know, their own illuminators and that, all their prices have been jacked up. You know, and I think, oh, is it because, you know, was I setting a standard as far as cost was concerned? I don't know, but I know that the price of things have gone up since I had the store open, so I did have to jack up like my illuminator by $5. But yeah, you know, so it's not too bad. You know,
right.
the cost in shipping alone has gone up in price
exactly.
as well. It's crazy, actually. You know, I've been off for maybe 6 months. The store was closed, maybe a little longer, actually. And I come back and I go to start ordering parts and that, and everything's just increased in price.
That's the economy is killing us all slowly.
It really is. I try to keep the prices as low as I can, but you know, there's only so much I can, you know, keep the prices down.
Well, you know, people shop very, you know, discriminatingly. Is that a good word? They're careful. People are becoming very careful. And so it's nice to know that you have an eye on that. But what people also need to know is that you back your sales because, you know, I've had very, very good success with you. I had an issue with one item. You fixed it immediately. I mean, people need to know that you back what you sell.
Yes.
So
sometimes, yeah, things happen. I mean, you know, shipping kills stuff a lot of the time. It's crazy, really. I mean, you know, they don't look after stuff. If you write fragile, it seems like it's more of a mission for them to damage it.
it becomes a challenge.
It seems like it's a challenge for them. Let's see how badly we can smash the crap out of this. And my illuminators themselves are actually pretty durable. So if they turn up and they don't work, and I don't know why, then I just, you know, just send it back and I'll fix it and whatnot, you know, or I'll make a new one.
Yeah.
You know, I that's my illuminators are really what got me started in this whole thing anyway.
Mm-hmm. You know, illuminators.
I was at a conference with Bill Murphy a couple of weeks ago, and he still has some of my illuminators. He has one of my very first ever floodlights that I ever made, you know, and the geophone as well. I mean, he's used them on Fact or Faked a few times, and they're stuff I'm making well before GHI.
Wow, that's cool. That's very cool.
That's a testament to how well your stuff is built.
Yeah, I thought so.
So there you go. Check it out. Creepy Hollow Gear, all one word, creepyhollowgear.com, and you will see Bradford stuff right there for sale, and the prints too, which I love. I love the fact that you're selling those now, Paul. That's really cool.
Each one's only going to be limited to 50 as well, I've decided. So there's only going to be 50 of each one.
Makes them a little bit more special. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. What is life going to hold for you, Paul, after GHI? I mean, someday, I guess I ask this because I always, on your bio, on your Facebook page, you talk about how you didn't get involved with the paranormal. I think as you said it, being pulled kicking and screaming from my bed by an unseen entity or something. You got into it because you're a sci-fi fan.
I'm a geek.
Right. As you say, you're a self-proclaimed sci-fi geek, and I can respect that. As a matter of fact, I see you talking about Doctor Who all the time on Facebook.
Oh, yeah. See, that's more of an obsession.
But anyways, so I know your lead into doing what you do now with GHI was a little bit different than some people, but once GHI is over, do you want to stay doing what you're doing now? Will you still do some of that on the side, or what's it going to hold for you?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. You know, I still have questions to be answered, and I think doing GHI and being there, my belief system itself has changed so many times now, that I'm now working on different theories and what really are ghosts and what is actually out there and all this stuff. So I don't know what the future holds. And that kind of excites me a little bit more than if I have everything planned out. I didn't plan. When I was young, I didn't plan to move to America. I didn't plan that once I got here, I was going to be on a television show. You know, I just let things work their own magic and see where I end up.
So here's the crazy thing. You just said that your thought beliefs have changed and you're creating these theories on ghosts. My sheet in front of me I have right now with my question written out. My next one for you was, what is Paul Bradford's theory on ghosts? What do you think they are? Who do you think they are? Why do you think they're here? Do you feel comfortable sharing any of that with us right now?
Of course I can. I don't mind doing that. It's a bit out there, though.
Well, let's. I'm so open in this field. I am so open to hearing them all. I want to hear them.
You know what? I think that's the way to be.
Yeah.
I think in the field of the unknown, you can't be closed-minded. Closed-minded people, there shouldn't really be a place for them. You know, there's a very big difference between skeptic and cynic. You know. My theory. Right, here we go. Now, a lot of people believe that time is a straight line. If time is a straight line, it runs. Just straight, keeps going all the time. But what if, like the universe itself, everything sort of winds itself into a sphere? What if time itself is like a big ball of string or a big ball of twine, whatever you want to call it? Mm-hmm. And what's actually happening is what we're seeing is bleeds from one time period to another. And, you know, we do these cases where, you know, let's say this guy, in fact, which one? It was a Castle Rising. This was in England, and the tour guide there, Norman, his name was, he went upstairs, he was at the top of the tower, it was before anybody even came to work that day, before anybody was, you know, before any visitors, and he came upstairs and he saw a gentleman in period dress. He came around the corner, and they both saw each other. There was definite, you know, he saw him, and he saw him, and it was like, whoa. And then for a few seconds, they just stared, looking at each other, and then he disappeared. Now, what if in 1300 and whatever, this guy who's wandering around the castle doing his business walks around and he sees a guy in jeans and a T-shirt, thinking, what the hell is that? Then it's gone. Now, we've had accounts, you know, witnessed accounts documented throughout history. There was a case, I think it was in 1542, maybe wrong. It's going to be close to that. Germany, over Nuremberg, there was witnessing, the citizens of Nuremberg, they woke up that morning to witness strange crosses in the sky and what appeared to be an aerial battle between these religious artifacts, or these religious symbols that they were claiming. And obviously anything abnormal, anything that's not quite normal back then was always attributed to the paranormal, to the religion. So they were seeing these crosses and these big balls of light fighting each other, and they could see, you know, there was actually documented, and there's a flyer that's actually in a museum now, and I can't remember which museum it's in right now, but it's actually like a like a one sheet, like a little spreadsheet thing, their broadsheet, whatever you want to call it. And they actually documented this event going on. They drew pictures of it as well, what was being seen. Now, if you look at an airplane today in the sky, it resembles that of a cross.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't know what an airplane looks like back then. They wouldn't understand what an airplane is, you know. Yeah. This is 1542, 1541. So, as I said, immediately they assume it's a cross in the sky, it's religious. You know. What if what they were really seeing, particularly over Germany, what if they were seeing some sort of aerial battle from World War II? What if there was this slippage in time, mm-hmm. that they saw this? In fact, a similar account was witnessed 5 years later. I think it might have been Austria. I can't remember. Maybe even been Switzerland. I cannot remember where the second account was. But you know, these things have been going on for years and years, and accounts have been dug up from, you know, and there's all this whole ancient alien theories and things like that. What if what's really being witnessed is just stuff from the future, as far as they're concerned?
Sure.
You know, I'm sitting here listening to this and I'm amazed because we hear accounts of, and first of all, let me tell you, I completely agree with your theory there. That's one of my favorite theories, but I've never heard anybody say an account of a historical happening where people were seeing something in the future that we thought we could explain. It's always backwards in time. It's always somebody seeing history. But I've never, mm-hmm. you know, I've never heard it the other way around. So that's a really interesting account.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's stuff documented all the time. You know, there's stuff out there all the time where people are saying they're seeing stuff, or, you know, what if all these people seeing this strange cross in the sky, what if they're not aliens? What if it's just us in the future?
I was just thinking that. You're absolutely right. What if our UFOs are us seeing our future ships?
Right. Yeah. I mean, we're already seeing shapes now. We're already seeing crafts being invented, crafts being tested that have these triangular shapes that are having all this, you know. Is it really just future aircrafts that, mm-hmm. that we're witnessing? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. This is why it's a theory.
I love it. It's a great theory, and I'm glad you shared it with us. Because, like I said, I love to hear people's theories. And, yeah, I think you got to be open to all of them and see what,
yes.
and roll the dice. Let's see what happens, right?
Yeah, exactly. Roll the dice.
Paul Bradford from Ghost Hunters International. Paul, thank you so much for being with us, man. We're going to be watching your Facebook. We're going to be watching your Twitter. We're going to be watching for Sci-Fi to pick up GHI for another season. We'll be following you, my friend, and we wish you the best of luck in everything you do.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the support, guys.
All right, there we go. Paul Bradford from Ghost Hunters International. And don't forget, visit his site at creepyhollowgear.com. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Larry the Mail Guy is going to be joining us for our mailbag questions. It's TFR on Jackalope Radio.
To bring the whole world to its knees.
Attention all personnel. You got it. You got it. You found the most listened to radio station. Jackalope Radio.
Hidden in the shadows of Dublin, the small and unassuming area known as Carlo, Ireland, holds a haunted history that you may not know about. The town dates back to before Ireland's written history. But now, its haunted history has been written and recorded by authors Cormac Strain and Danny Carthy. Haunted Carlo takes you on an eerie and fascinating journey through pubs, cafes, private homes, and schools. Go to hauntedcarlo.com. or Amazon.com to get your copy today and see a side of Carlo, Ireland you never knew existed. You're listening to Taps Family Radio, where ghost stories come to life. The Taps family is truly international. If you live in the peninsula of Fife on the eastern border of Scotland and feel you may have a haunting, there's help. Scottish Paranormal, a proud Taps family member, is a scientific-based paranormal research team that is dedicated to the study of the unknown. Helping individuals, families, and business owners over the past 6 years, Scottish Paranormal is ready to help you. Their work is confidential and no charge for service will ever be asked of their clients. If you feel you need the help of Scottish Paranormal, then go to their website at www.scottish-paranormal.co.uk.
Welcome back to Taps Family Radio Tuesday evening. So good to be back with you guys. We took our hiatus and we are back and happy to be with you. Tim Ellis, Chris Perkins with you. And right now we are very excited to welcome back to the show. We haven't heard from him in a while. We haven't heard from any of us in a while, but we would like to welcome back to TFR, Larry the Mail Guy. Larry, although a bit under the weather, dealing with some allergies, man, it's great to have you with us.
Oh man, it's glad to be back. It's been a long time.
It has been a long time since we talked. You've been a busy man since we were away too.
We have. We've been pretty much swamped all year.
Well, I know you've been doing your show, Paranormal Community Radio. And,
yes.
You've got your show.
Yes, which actually, it comes on right after this.
Exactly. So you've got Paranormal Community Radio, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, and you can find them at paracomradio.com. And that's coming up tonight with our own Larry the Mail Guy and Tom, who you've heard on the show before, too, as our backup producer. And they bring you a great show. Always right after Taps Family Radio. All right, man, let's do this thing. What do we got for mailbag questions?
Well, I'll tell you, I got two. One is pretty straightforward. It's from Kim, and she wants to know, while we were on our hiatus, have we done any really interesting cases?
Good question. Actually, my group up here in northern Michigan did. It was a case that was about 2 hours away, 2 hours south of us, and it's now, for the area it's in, it's like a state building. There's office spaces in it and that, but its original conception at the time was a sanitarium, and actually has records of showing that the doctors there. The law turned a blind eye, and they were able to they did shock therapy. And so, I mean, it's one of those buildings when you drive up to, it's got that big cement smokestack, coming up and just busts through the clouds, and it's all that old brick. And it had one of those death tunnels where they would wheel the bodies out underneath the building so that the patients wouldn't see them. And it had one of those tunnels too. And man, I'm telling you, it is one of the most surreal places I have ever investigated. And it was an amazing place to be, but it just had this feeling about it. It was pretty amazing.
That sounds awesome. You can't go wrong with the whole sanatorium thing.
You can't. They have such a mystique about them. They have such a story around them.
Yeah, a level of creepiness. I've always told my team, I was like, I've done investigations all over the place. Big locations, small locations. Houses, residentials, anything in between. And it never, freaks me out or anything. But for some reason, sanitariums just really make me uneasy. I don't know why. I don't know why.
I agree with you. Now that I've done one for the first time, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
But we did a case over the winter that was really it was kind of a lifelong dream case.
Oh, cool.
It was a jail in my hometown. And when I was younger, I'd had personal experiences, and it's kind of funny and creepy at the same time. So I'll kind of make it quick. But it was a jail, like a prison, built in late 17 whatever.
Cool.
And it had burned down and killed all the inmates. And we're talking the worst of the worst, like guys waiting on death row for rape, murder, those kinds of things. Right. Back then, they'll just take you out back and hang you.
Right.
And I remember when I first saw the place when I was younger, they had turned it into a library, which was kind of odd. But what made it even more odd was that the cells that the prisoners were in, they had turned those into reading rooms.
Oh, jeez, Louise.
Threw some beanbag chairs in there and some Dr. Seuss books.
Come on.
And we're talking like the beds and the cell bars and the doors were still there.
No.
Yeah. Oh. Just threw some beanbags in there and said, "Oh, you kids go in there and read."
Oh, my. That's just so, there's something wrong about that.
Oh, no. It was even when I was in second grade when I saw this, I was like, well, that's not right.
Right.
They shouldn't do that. But it had shut down for many years due to mold. Well, they had recently opened it back up and going to try to use it for an office or something like that.
Yeah.
And I managed to get in there and do an investigation. I'll tell you, we're going to have a show on Paranormal Community Radio with just the evidence from that place alone.
Oh, so can't wait.
Everyone's got to stay tuned for that one. But
some pretty good like Class A EVPs kind of thing?
Oh, screams, yells, cursing, Class A, Class B.
Wow.
Cell doors, you can hear them. I mean, just, oh, it's horrible. I say it's horrible, but, you know, as the investigator in me, I was just like, yeah, you know, this place delivered. I knew when I was 2 years old that this place would be awesome.
Wow, man, you definitely topped mine. That's absolutely amazing.
Oh, there the bad go. Part, though, the worst part is that right after we got in there, this is, you know, back in December-ish.
Yeah.
January, early January. Right after that, someone had purchased it. So it doesn't look like we're going to get to go back. I'm going to try to work with those people and see if we, you know, see if they're a little more open to the idea than most people would be.
What are their plans to use it as now? Are they going to make it a library again, or?
No, I think the guy's going to use it as an attorney, it as his office.
Okay. Wow.
Which I was like, really?
Yeah.
With the sales and everything.
Wow.
Well, whatever.
Cool. All right. What's our next question?
Well, last one. Let's see here. I had it written down. Let me see if I can find it. Oh. Do we have any exciting cases coming up this year? Because I know a lot of teams are traveling outside of their state. I've seen a lot of that here lately. And so Tim here wants to know if we have any exciting cases coming up, and would there be public events?
Hmm. Would they be public events, or are there public events?
I think what they're meaning is, you know, like last year, my team and Tom's team traveled to Franklin, Kentucky for the Octagon Hall.
Okay.
Which, FYI, I totally recommend doing. So I'm thinking maybe, you know, kind of that kind of thing. You're traveling to an outside your state area.
Mm-hmm.
And would it be a public event that people could attend and kind of check out what you guys do?
Okay. We actually, I mean, you know, I think every investigation's exciting, but to the general person, probably not. Because right now, what's really weird, it seems either feast or famine lately. And we went such a long stretch with no residential cases. It seemed like all of our cases were what I call historical locations, you know, like the sanatorium or the prison that you were talking about. But then all of a sudden we've been getting hit with all these residential ones. So our dance card is filled up pretty quick for the next few months anyway, with residential cases. So all of a sudden, boom, we're back into the houses again, working with the families, which is you approach both of them in two different ways. So we've kind of had to get back into the mode of helping out families and helping out the homeowners. So that's what we're, and so obviously, no, those are not public cases. So yeah, my answer is kind of boring on that one, Tim. Sorry about that. How about you guys?
No, we don't have anything. I'll just cut and dry. No.
No, not at all.
I would love to say yes, but no. Yeah. You know, actually, you know, me and Tom are going to probably try to do the Octagon Hall again.
So where is that located in the United States?
Franklin, Kentucky.
Okay.
It's about 35 minutes north of Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay, okay. I got friends down in Nashville. Maybe I should try that.
You should. I mean, it is a fantastic location. It's just not only, you know, on the paranormal side is it really good, but historically, the place is just phenomenal. Like, I'll tell you, I couldn't even describe how phenomenal this was. I was sitting in this chair, right behind me was a huge Confederate flag. And the owner of the place, Billy Bird, comes walking in. And he's like, "Oh, you like my flag?" And I was like, "Yeah, I think it's awesome. You know, it's huge, it's old."
Yeah.
And he's like, "That is, what is his name? Oh, that is Stonewall Jackson, General Stonewall Jackson's original personal Confederate flag that his wife donated to the museum."
Wow.
I mean, you're talking, there's a piece of history on the wall.
Big time.
And I was just, you know, I'm not a thief, but that was the only time in my life where I looked at it and was just like, I could snatch this and run. You know, I don't know how far I'd get, but I think, yeah, I would totally do it, you know. But, I mean, the place is awesome. You know, we got that probably coming up in October. It was kind of funny how that, I just pretty much just told Tom that we're going in October. I didn't even ask him.
Is that like one of the locations, though, where you call ahead of time? You say, "Hey, I'd like to set up a night of investigation with my group," and kind of thing? And they, and like a little bit of money or something up front kind of thing?
Oh, yeah. You can call them and book it. And, okay. You know, there's other places like Waverly and a bunch of other locations that charge a lot of money.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know. I've never been to Waverly, so I don't know how much you get out of it. But I know at Octagon Hall, it's $60 a person, or maybe 80. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But you get a T-shirt, and you get to stay there all night. They hand you the keys, man.
Really?
And just tell you to lock up. Wow. Yeah, I mean, they're just fantastic people, and then just really nice guys to work with. So
very cool.
I'm sure you can check it out. People Google that, Octagon Hall, and read up on it. You're going to find the place is really cool. But,
in Kentucky.
As far as other stuff, you know, that's the only thing we got planned for this year. Other than that, like you said, we're doing residential just like you guys.
All right. Very good. All right, Larry, if people want to send in mailbag questions, if they want to contact Larry the Mail Guy so that you can then relay them on the show, how do they do so?
Yes. You can email me directly at tfradiomailguy@gmail.com. Or, of course, you can always send it to us on Facebook.
Yes, on our Taps Family Radio Facebook page.
If you have mailbag questions, though, send them to me, tfradiomailguy@gmail.com.
You're getting all ready for your show, aren't you? You're sidetracked. He's getting ready.
I'm trying to multitask. I'm trying to talk and do stuff. Right after this, 7 o'clock, Paracom Radio starts. You can find that at paracomradio.com. So
very good. All right, Larry. Hey, tell Tom I said hi. You guys have a great show tonight, and thank you for the mailbag questions. And make sure you get them into Larry so he can share them with us on the show. And that's going to do it for us. We will be back with you right here on Jackalope Radio. Be watching our Facebook page and our main website to find out who our upcoming guests will be. And we thank you for welcoming us back with open arms. It's so good to be back on the air with you. This is Taps Family Radio on Jackalope Radio.
You've been listening to Taps Family Radio, the safest place in the paranormal world. Join us every Tuesday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central, 4 Mountain, and 3 Pacific on the new home for Taps Family Radio, Jackalope Radio.